over the last year or so, it's probably been the biggest underperformance we've ever seen since we launched our sustainable portfolios of those underlying ETFs relative to the index. And a couple of the reasons for that are, you know, their weights towards the big US tech companies is lower than the index.
Welcome to The Greener Way. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar, Executive Director of Media at FS Sustainability. We are recording on Gadigal land and we pay our respects to the traditional custodians of country and elders past, present, and emerging. Today, we're joined by Chris Breike, founder and CEO of StockSpot, to talk about how sustainable ETFs are performing and what investors should know in 2026. Chris, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Chris, let's start with a big picture. Sustainable investing has been growing for years, but the headlines are mixed. How would you describe the state of sustainable ETFs now, and are they living up to expectations?
Look, I think you've described them pretty well. They've been growing pretty consistently over the years, but that growth's come in waves, and it also hasn't been consistent in different parts of the world. So in Europe, for instance, sustainable investing and ESG investing has grown very fast, and it's taken a lot of market share. It's been very slow in the US to take off, and I think the Trump administration hasn't sort of sped it up.
No,
and in
not
Australia,
very
probably
supportive of the sustainable investment community in the US.
Not at all. And I think actually some companies are kind of concerned about going, you know, they might be worried about being too far now and are stepping sort of back in some areas. But yeah, Australia probably fits somewhere in between that. We've seen, you know, very strong growth over the last 5 to 10 years. There's in the ETF world, which is the world we cover at StockSpot, around $13 billion in sustainable and ESG-focused ETFs. And that's grown multiple fold over the last 5 years, although there's been a bit of a slowing in the last year or two for a few different reasons, which we can talk about.
So $13 billion, that's a big enough number. But what about the returns? How have sustainable ETFs performed compared to traditional ETFs? I know a lot of people, they go for the ASX 200 ETF straight away. So that would be a point of comparison.
Yeah, I think you're right. So I think most people benchmark the sustainable ETFs to the equivalent indexed funds that are available through ETFs. And I think maybe to step back even from there, there are probably three categories of sustainable and ESG ETFs on the market in Australia. There's the Australian share-focused ones, the global share-focused ones, and then the green bond-focused ones. And they've all performed quite differently to the underlying indices. And not only have they performed differently, but even within sustainable ETFs, there's been quite big divergence in performance. So to give you some examples, even over the last year in the Australian share-focused sustainable ETFs, the performance has varied from less than 1% over the last year to 12 or 13%. And that's not something you see in the traditional index space. And it's really because the underlying holdings are quite different because they have different methodologies. So if you've invested in a sustainable ETF that's emitted, for instance, technology shares or has lower weightings to technology shares or doesn't have gold companies over the last year, you would have underperformed. Whereas the sustainable ETFs that have higher allocations to those sectors have done quite well. So there's actually quite a lot of difference. And from what I'm seeing, that's actually leading to quite a big amount of difference in the flows in and out of these ETFs as well.
Wow, that is a huge kind of range from 1% to 12%. So we are not hugging the benchmark, if you like, because ETFs are known to be like very closely returning the same numbers. So then this leads me to my next question, whether it's one of our listeners who is in the business of managing sustainable companies or everyday investors, what should they look for when they're choosing a sustainable ETFs?
Well, we've always said to clients, it really comes down to your own personal values and ethics picking one of these ETFs because the underlying methodologies are quite different between them. So it's not something you can just pick one blindly. You really want to think about personally what's important to you. You know, are you more focused on carbon emissions, let's say, or are you more focused on board representation by women? There are lots of different issues that fit within this ESG remit. When we surveyed our clients before we launched our sustainable portfolios, which was back in 2020, what we heard was certainly the carbon emission side and the green side was more important for a lot of Australian investors. So we preferred those ETFs, the ones that are a little bit more harsh on excluding companies that are high carbon emitters. What that leads to is quite a lot of divergence from the market because it actually removes a lot of the big resource stocks, which are a big component of our market, and means that when resources are doing well in Australia, and that happens when typically inflation's high or inflation expectations are high, like at the moment, they underperform. But maybe when other sectors like biotechnology and, you know, utilities are doing well, these ETFs do better. So what we've noticed in our ESG ETFs is although they perform pretty similarly over the long run, over the short run, they really are a little bit more volatile than the index returns.
Going back to choosing sustainable ETFs, three things: fees, transparency, and ESG ratings. Do you have any insights on what people prioritize, or do people even understand ESG ratings to start with?
I think people don't pay a lot of attention to the ratings themselves. There are a few different organizations out there that are providing ratings, and ultimately, for an index to be used by an ETF provider, that ETF provider, you know, must have believed that they're using a reasonable methodology for including and excluding different companies. Look, there's been some interesting regulatory, you know, oversight in this area over the last few years. ASIC has been quite concerned about greenwashing.
Yes.
And this is where ETF providers or just fund providers generally overstate the environmental claims of their products. And they've given out quite a few big fines in Australia where they've thought that ETF providers or fund managers have overstated the claims. And under the false and misleading advertising kind of remit, they've said that this isn't what they should be doing. But there are ratings. I think the bigger focus our clients have certainly said they have, and these are very kind of, everyday Australian retail investors, is really just browsing the underlying companies that are within the ETF and, you know, feeling comfortable investing in those companies. And so if you're someone that, you know, doesn't want to invest into oil and gas companies, for instance, you don't want to be scrolling down the list of underlying companies and see a whole lot of oil and gas companies. You know, other people might think other factors are important, you know, and so those factors need to be considered. Fees is the other one I've seen a lot more focus on recently. So when ESG ETFs just launched and started to grow, you know, between 6 to 8 years ago, there weren't many out there and there wasn't a lot of competition and fees tended to be quite high. So the fees of these ETFs were typically all over 0.5% per year and some of them, you know, closer to 1% a year. What we've seen over the last few years is a lot more competition and a lot more product launches below 0.3% per year. So getting much closer to a traditional index ETF. And almost all of the new money coming in has been flowing towards those low-cost options. So there's been a big focus, I think, investors have had on the lower-cost options. And that typically, that price sensitivity we tend to see happens when returns aren't as strong. And, you know, over the last few years, although 10 or 12% is still reasonable, and if you're losing 1% of that to fees, it does have an impact. And I think that's led to a bit of switching.
The best case scenarios are quite impressive. I interviewed a fund manager for a climate change leaders fund, and the return was 22%. So it can get really high. But what I'm hearing here is that with the fees as 0.3%, it becomes more sensible for people to say, okay, fees aren't a barrier anymore. Because traditionally, fund managers tend to put a premium over specialist funds, right? But it's good to see that that's now changing. There's been a couple of research around the view that people want to be investing sustainably up until they need to put their money in, and it's always about the returns first. Any insights on the inflows and outflows when sustainable funds aren't doing well, or is it do people hold their funds in?
From my experience, people hold their funds in, but the interest of putting new money in or attracting new clients gets more difficult when they're underperforming. I think it's just natural. And with many investment products, they follow the same trend. And where performance is strong, people chase that strong performance. And when performance is weak, people hold off and they're questioning why. And, you know, maybe that actually is the right time to be investing more. But unfortunately, the human psyche isn't to do that. We're naturally not contrarians. We like to follow the crowd. So over the last year or so, it's probably been the biggest underperformance we've ever seen since we launched our sustainable portfolios of those underlying ETFs relative to the index. And a couple of the reasons for that are, you know, their weights towards the big US tech companies is lower than the index.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's been a lot of discussion recently about the Microsofts and Amazons and Nvidias and Apples having such a big weight in the index now. That's the case for the, you know, S&P 500 or, you know, our global 100 ETF. But for sustainable ETFs, they have a much lower allocation to tech shares. And so they've underperformed because tech shares have been driving the market return. And then other sectors like gold, where gold stocks have tripled over the last year, if you don't have any allocation to them, you might have underperformed. So I've had a look at our flows, and certainly over the last sort of 6 to 12 months, the flows into our ESG portfolios have slowed relative to our, you know, traditional index products. And that you would expect to reverse if they have a period of outperformance.
I know. And as you've said, with the human psyche, they jump in when it's the worst time to jump in, or you're following a trend when it's already too late. But if you're underweight the tech stocks, what are you overweight on? So what makes up the portfolio?
Look, it really, and I had a bit of a look at this even today, it really varies a lot based on the HETF. So because their methodologies are quite different, even looking at the weights of the top 10 stocks, they're wildly different. So some of them in Australia, you might find the biggest stocks are the likes of Woolworths and Telstra and Goodman Group, a property company. You know, some of them you might find they do have the big banks in there. Some of them you might find they don't. You know, surprisingly to me, one of the very popular ESG ETFs in Australia has BHP and Woodside Petroleum in it. I wouldn't have thought Woodside Petroleum would fit into too many, but obviously based on that index methodology, it's okay. So I think for the ones that are more hard green and they've emitted a lot of resource stocks, they tend to be, yeah, higher in areas like consumer staples. You know, Woolworths and Wesfarmers is a good example. But that's not always the case. Some don't have Woolworths because historically Woolworths has sold, you know, tobacco, for instance. And so I think one of the big challenges consumers have and the industry has generally is having, you know, a consistent approach and methodology. Although I'm not sure that consistent approach will ever exist because people's values will always be different. But also society's values are always changing as well. Something that we considered as a society unethical 10 years ago may come back into something people consider as okay, and vice versa. Things that we considered were okay, we might think are unethical.
Yeah. Well said. I mean, that is the major debate even within the ESG community, where they just can't pin down definition of an investment even amongst themselves. But what I like about what you said there about BHP and Woodside being in the portfolio is that truly the investor needs to take that extra step to say, okay, are you okay with these? Because another thing that I've noticed is more discussion around transition companies. You know, you may be a vice energy company, but you're the best in breed that in terms of moving to renewables, for example.
You're exactly right. And maybe that's why those companies are in some of the portfolios and not in others. And you know, there's certainly the other point of view that's been debated in the industry widely, that is, if you're not a shareholder in even a company that's a brown company or a bad emitter, you don't actually get a vote and you don't get to change the future of that company. So by being an investor, you know, there is an argument that you actually have more impact to make change for good by being an investor than by not being an investor. So, you know, I think there are so many different debates. That's what makes it such an interesting area, but a bit of a challenging area as an investor, because you really have to, like you say, do that extra step and do that extra research to make sure that, you know, you're getting what you expected and you're getting what's aligned to what you're looking for. You know, and there's been other companies out there that have tried to make it easier for consumers to discern the differences and, you know, kind of understand the underlying companies. But actually, it's not too hard if you— my advice would be, if you are looking at one of these ESG ETFs, the underlying holdings and sectors is available very readily on any of their websites. Yeah. And so it's always easy to research yourself as well.
So what's your outlook for sustainable ETFs over the next 5 years? Do you expect more innovation, maybe more biodiversity funds, for example? And will the performance continue to match or at least be reasonable for an investor choosing a sustainable ETF versus a conventional ETF?
Well, yeah, as you probably know from StockSpot's philosophy, yeah, prediction is very difficult and we don't like to predict the future of markets. However, what I would say is that, like, I think the big difference in performance of ESG ETFs versus the index will continue. One of the reasons I think that's the case is that, you know, a lot of them don't have resource companies, and resources are a big part of our market. And if resources and other sectors are having differences in performance, then that's going to drive big differences. You know, gold's a great example. Gold's a sector that hasn't done very well for the previous 10 years, but over the last year or two is up a few hundred percent.
It's insane.
It's had a fantastic result. You know, we have gold in all of our portfolios as a hard asset, but in our ESG portfolios, the underlying gold miners aren't always there. You know, and so people have to consider, you know, which parts are ESG and which parts aren't. So one of the predictions I'd have is that those variances will continue. And so people that are investing in this way will need to be patient, and they'll need to really see out the whole market cycle to get the returns they want. But there could be long periods of pain. And if we do continue to see higher inflation and higher concerns around government debt, then historically resources and hard assets has been a sector that's done very well, like in the 1970s. And so that could actually drive ESG funds to perform quite poorly for a period of time while inflation concerns are high. And so investors will really need to hold through that part of the cycle through to when those concerns are alleviated to actually see the good performance out the other side. So I think patience is always going to be needed in this space. Yeah, I think that may lead this area generally to struggle for new assets for a while. And probably that and just generally some of the backlash that's coming out of countries like the US, if that transmits further into the world, I think this area may just be one that gets less focus and less attention over the next couple of years, rightly or wrongly. I, you know, don't have a view on whether that's the right thing or not, but it is the case, and the US is pushing against a lot of these policies. And so, yeah, I personally wouldn't see this as the, you know, likely to be the highest growth area over the next 5 years. It's had a fantastic run up until now. And I think if you are looking to invest in this space, be discerning. And if you're looking to create products in this space, you know, I'd be looking at areas like energy transition, which we discussed before, you know, which I think is a less of a political discussion. I think there's more alignment on energy transition generally. And be thinking a bit more out of the box around energy transition. What are the sorts of companies that should be in an ETF for energy transition? You know, should they be nuclear stocks or not? Should they be uranium stocks or not? You know, should they be solar, wind? What are the sorts of businesses, you know, should it be gas? What are the sorts of businesses that deserve a place in an ETF for energy transition? That, again, takes a bit of thought. And I think there'd be a lot of different opinions around what that looks like as well.
Chris, before we wrap up, tell us a little bit more about StockSpot, your mission and the types of investors that you work with.
Sure. So StockSpot's a business I started about 12 years ago. We're a more or less online business that help everyday Australians invest into a diversified portfolio of ETFs. So you come to our website, answer a bunch of questions, and then we build and manage an ETF portfolio for you that's aligned to your goals and your risk appetite. We have a few different options from traditional index ETFs through to a range of sustainable ETF portfolios and a few other thematic ETF portfolios. So we let investors choose the one that they want. But then the idea is it's very hands-off. You don't have to do any work. We do all the tax, the rebalancing, picking the right ones. So it's a product I designed for people that know they should be investing but really don't have the time or desire to manage their own portfolios. And yeah, I think it's a good option for, you know, busy professionals out there that, you know, have some money to invest. And, you know, where we see a lot of interest in the sustainable portfolios as well is for our kids accounts. You know, we have about 6,000 parents investing on our platform for their kids. I think we're close to $100 million of kids accounts. Wow. And a bigger proportion of those are invested sustainably because I think a lot of parents, you know, thinking for the futures of their kids, you know, what are the sorts of, you know, businesses that their kids might want to support in the future as well.
Anything else you'd like to add in terms of what is sustainable investing like?
Look, I think the experience of our clients has been that they want to make sure that their portfolio is low cost, diversified, so they don't lose diversification in their sustainable investing, but really skewed into certain areas where they both want to take money away from companies they don't like and add more into industries and areas that they do like. You know, I think probably that second part's the area we haven't talked as much about, that these sustainable ETFs are not only, you know, pulling out of some areas of the market, but they're also actively engaging in giving more of a market weight to other sectors. And that's you know, potentially the surprise area where I think these ETFs could outperform in the future is if they are actually upweighting the sectors of the market that are driving the future. You know, we talked about, you know, energy transition as a potential area, but it may be there's some undiscovered gems in the market that are going to be a big driver of a lot of that change. And if these ESG ETFs are correctly adding weight to those stocks, it could actually be helping their performance. And, you know, that could be the surprise, you know, positive catalyst for this sector over the next 5 years.
Chris, once again, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This is The Greener Way. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar. Thanks for listening.
The Greener Way podcast is a product of FS Sustainability. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement, and if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.